trained in English. Well, why you didn't train in English? No, you haven't done by the way. So the truth is that I did my school from Brooks. So we didn't have to do all those supplementary revisions. So I should say that. Oh, right, that's good. Drink a cure. I give you Rabbi Sitchin. I give you Rabbi Kalman. That's fine. We'd like to welcome President Joel from Yeshiva University. This morning, President Joel, Rabbi Kwalwasser spoke after davening. He spoke about the significance of Yeshiva University, not just to the students who go to YU, but the significance, its influence on the whole Orthodox and certainly modern Orthodox community in all of North America and in the world. And it's really, truly a leading force. He also spoke about your influence on the college campuses across the country when you directed the Hillel organization. And just for a moment, I don't want to speak about either one of those things. I'd like to just express a karas hatov on behalf of, you represent Yeshiva University, and on behalf of most of the Rebbeim in Yeshiva which went to Yeshiva University, and the students, the countless students that have gone through the doors of Yeshiva University, and the many, many more students that will be going to YU. Specifically, in the last few years, I know we've had many, many students who truly had financial issues and could not go to YU, and YU made every possible effort to make it a reality, that dream a reality for them to be at YU. So I want to express that Akar Satov on behalf of Leva Torah and the students of Leva Torah. I also want to just point out that although our numbers, you know, in the beginning years of Leva Torah were small, so we didn't have that many guys at YU, and we always boast that we're all the college campuses that we have, all the college campuses that they go, our students take a leadership role. So at YU also, we've had students that have gone through that have made an impact. One of them, from year two at Yeshiva University, perhaps you know Eitan Kastner, who works very closely with President Joel in the office. We have Sam Weprin, also a presidential fellow, who is currently at YU as a presidential fellow. Mark Merrill, who just left last night, so he has his own minion at YU, and he also started an organization within the walls of YU called Torah Litzion, which affords a lot of students who don't have the financial ability to come to Israel for the year, who assists them in there. All this is fruits that we both share together. And Adam Berman, of course, is one of the cover boys for YU that Moishe always tries to get him to speak at any event possible. And Betzal Wasser, brother of Pinny, where's Pinny? So who is, there we go, Pinny, who started the first Karl Bach Minyan at Yeshiva University. So them, along with many other people who have taken an active role at YU, we all thank you for the opportunities that you've given to all of our students, and we welcome you to Yeshiva Leva Torah.
Thank you. B'shus HaRav and B'shus HaRabanim. It's very interesting that now I know that all of my major troublemakers came from Leva Torah. Learn from that. Amen. Sometimes I think it's a test to see whether I'll make the bracha. Leva Torah. First of all, kol hakavod for choosing and being chosen by this yeshiva from its very beginnings, which were considerably more humble than where you are now. It was driven by a vision not to be a business, maybe to be meleches hakodesh, to be sacred work. But it was always defined by the leadership of Boaz, but by its name, it's Kishmo Kenhu, it's Lev HaTorah, that the centrality is Torah, but that Lev is not something that we should take in passing. And often, if there's a concern that I have in terms of our community, it's that we think that Torah stands alone. Torah is essential, and without Torah, we are adrift and lost. But Torah has to provoke us to look at what our lev is. I was commenting to people that one of the things that concerns me about high school education in America, which I think is on a very high level, I think you all went to great places, I don't know that we spend enough of our energies thinking about the lev. I don't think that we think about Ruchnius sufficiently, so that you are all very well qualified academically. But Torah is not an academic achievement, it's a romance. It's not the fire of a brush fire that destroys, it's the fire of a flame with which you kindle other lights, and therefore you need to have the Torah to know how to focus that passion. I'm convinced that those of you who learn in this yeshiva both advance in your Torah, but you also have the kind of rabbeim and mashkichim and each other who are looking together to forge a world where you get to profoundly matter, but you get to profoundly matter not just because of your brain, but because of your heart. That's why we put on tefillin shel yad, which is across from your heart and engages your body, and tefillin shel rosh. We are not just the cerebral people. We talk about ourselves as whole people. So I'm excited that you're here. And for those of you who are chosen and who choose and aspire, I am honored to be able to work for many of you next year. Mostly I'm inspired by the fact that since we've never been known by our numbers but by the quality, that Klal Yisrael is going to go on through who you are and what you do, whether it's here or whether it's in Arzat HaBrit. So, and clearly, you know, one of the reasons that the people who pay me let me do this is because I'm also here to give encouragement to those of you to think that if what you're doing is important, you have to continue doing it. If you need to engage in college-level political science, college-level mathematics, college-level economics, college-level English, probably college-level Torah, should be at least as important in your life. And it is too soon to make it tafel. It's always too soon to make it tafel. But there is a time for you to engage in an educational process where you also benefit from being with other people of other backgrounds, of other beliefs, of other levels of observance. And that's why God invented graduate school. But at this point in your lives, at critical times of your prowess and your power and your influence and your ability to be influenced, the opportunity to be part of the leadership of your people and to grow together and to spend your time working hard, by the way, working hard but having lots of, I mean, thank God we have 6 children, and all of them are wonderful, all of them are smart, all of them are not super academic achievers, and yet all of them found at yeshiva a home where they felt like they were owners, where they could achieve, where they could be comfortable and go on to what's next. I also have to say that some of you know that we have a group of students and alumni who are the YU a cappella group, whose name is Maccabees, who have kind of, truthfully, back in the States, have given us more visibility than anything in our history, which is a little pathetic. But I think it also speaks to the fact that there is a hunger for people to feel good, to feel shalem, to feel special, but to feel normal. I mean, the magic of the Maccabees video is that it somehow connected with people. I guess they wanted on Hanukkah to sing something about more than my dreidel being made of clay when it isn't. And silly words, but silly words that included our story and learning Torah, really resonated in wild ways. I mean, just on YouTube, it's over 4.5 million hits. But this group was on every morning show, you know, CNN and John King and The Early Show, and they're talking to Jay Leno, and it was mentioned on Saturday Night Live, and they were on all the local news broadcasts, and they were on Aretz Sheva and Aretz Esser here, and they even came here to give a concert for Bnei Akiva, 7 of them. And they did a news story that was 4 minutes long, and I'm looking at the TV online, right, and I see my kids singing on Ben Yehuda Street. So I said, I raised the child so that he ends up singing on Ben Yehuda Street, and nobody was giving him money. It was a real problem. But I also have to tell you, I had a communication with someone from the Midwest who said that they're not Orthodox, but he's wanted to give his children a day school education, and his wife has been opposed. And then they saw the video, and she said, okay, let's do it. Okay? There's really a desire, I've said this, but to have people who take themselves, who take life seriously, but don't take themselves so seriously. And when you think about what was special, so of course it captured the moment. You could work and employ 9,000 marketing people to figure out how to do this, and it couldn't happen. The Ribbono Shel Olam had to say, okay, it's time for a, you know, for something decent to happen. But people looked at these guys who looked normal, who looked frum, who clearly were wholesome, who were having fun, and who seemed normal. And it's a big Kiddush Hashem for the world to realize that we're not people who are just out, different, and uninvolved, but that we can touch them. So if any of you know Nachum, who is, my son is one of the Maccabees. He's the one who's in the middle who sings, I flip my latkes in the air. Good looking. Don't tell him I said any of this. And, of course, the other thing that's really annoying is I was a big booster of the Maccabees, because when I worked at the head of the Hillel Foundation for 15 years, one of the things I thought was important was building Jewish a cappella groups on campus. I came to YU, there was none. These kids started to organize one. I was really excited. I got behind them. I had them sing at commencement, and I found some money for them to do their first CD. And they even reached out to me and asked me if I would be on their first CD, if I would sing, because they knew sometimes they'd come for a Shabbos and I would daven and they'd be a choir, it'd be very nice. So I said, no, I wouldn't. I said, please, oh please, okay. On their one CD so far, on cut 8, you know, I'm singing Kol Baramah, which is really very nice. I don't know if it's very nice or not, but you know. And I was very proud because I'm like part of the Maccabees. So all of a sudden they dump me for my kid, right? And then they go viral. It's just not, life just isn't fair. The other thing I would want to say to you is that it's very interesting. I spent a good part of my life having the zechus to be involved with Klal Yisrael and Kahalasha things, and to be able to spend time to be able to touch numbers of Jewish people. And I've been doing it I've been running major organizations. This is almost 8 years at Yeshiva, and it was 15 years at Hillel. And my son and his friends, in 3 weeks, reached more people than I would be able to reach in 15 lifetimes. It's kind of a great leveler. What does it mean? I hope I reach them with a little more depth, but it means that you have the capacity in your lives, as owners of a new technology and a new reality, to really have impact in profound ways, and you get to use it l'tov or l'ra. You have the capacity through control of just not the media, but the whole social network, the capacity, look, even the capacity to be studying here. When my first child was here once a week, she was at Midreshet Moriah, and we agreed that once a week on Friday at 1 o'clock, we'd be waiting at the phone because she'd call from the one phone in Midreshet Moriah. Right? And now, of course, your problem is that your parents can call all the time. Nama, I don't get phone reception here. But it's a different world. But you do have that capacity. The flip side of it is you're also subject to influences and invasions that make it harder for you to figure out your space. I mean, complete strangers friend you. Why are they friending you? They're not your friend. What does it mean to be friends? You have all these conversations. You don't talk to each other anymore. You text each other. Okay, but you don't even, you know, punctuation doesn't count. Spelling doesn't count. Adjectives don't usually happen, right? And I'm old enough to remember when you would spell you with a Y, right? So everything has changed, and you have to be careful to make sure that you are masters of all that's at your hands and not the other way around, right? La'avda l'shamro is what we get to do with the world, not to be ruled by it. But you have enormous capacity. So I want to talk to you about a couple of things today. The yeshiva pitch is there. I would love all of you who are capable of doing it, right? And most of you are, to continue your learning at YU, to grow as people at YU, to define yourselves as leaders of the Jewish people. You should do that because the academics are excellent, the Torah is first rate, the friendship network that you have is going to sustain you for your lives, the ability to either engage in service learning or do acts of chesed or run a newspaper or be on an NCAA team or be part of the intramurals or be part of the largest Israel club that on any campus in the world, probably including Israel, is just really profound. And finally, since we're small schools, we work for you for success. That's a combination you can't meet anywhere else. I'm done with the cell. There'll be times for questions, askers, answers, and attack. elsewhere. Let me see if I can give you just anything that might be a little bit worthwhile for you as well, since I'm interrupting your learning. So I found out in recent past there was a news item that the Disney organization is building a facility in Haifa. I mean, who would think that you need a Disneyland in addition to the State of Israel? Who would think that you need more fantasy land than that? But they're building something in Haifa. Now, I thought it was like a Disney World. Somebody told me it's an entertainment center. I'm not sure what it is. But at least saying that gives me the chance to tell you a story that I heard about Roy Disney. That years ago, when Disney World in Orlando was being opened, so Roy Disney entertained a group of executives who he took on a tour of Disney World. And during the tour, one of the executives turned to Roy Disney and said, you know, isn't it a pity that your brother Walt Disney didn't live to see this? And Roy Disney turned to him and said, no, you're wrong. He did see it. That's why it's here. Right? The role of vision, not just sight, but the role of vision, right, is critical. Is critical. Prophet Yoel said, if not this one, the real one, that if there is no vision, the people perish. Right? You need to be able, Eizahu Chachama Roes HaNolad, Nolad, to be able to see what's there, but be a partner in bringing it into life is so critically important. And one of the things that I hope that this year does for you as well is it gives you the space to ask questions about who you are, about who you are and what your relationship is with the Ribbono Shel Olam. What are the skill sets that you have and what are the skills that you can acquire to allow you to articulate in your head and then to the world your own vision of the life you want to live, of the people you want to love, of the influence you want to have, of the good you want to do, of the joy you want to bring and get. Right? But how do we develop our own vision and what's our vision? So there's a new book that was published in America by Frank Luntz called What Most Americans Want. Frank Luntz is he teaches an adjunct course at Penn. He's an expert in the area of survey research. He does public opinion polls. Some of you might have seen him if you ever watch Fox News. He does a lot of the Republican polling, and he often does like these focus groups where he'll have voters and he'll ask them questions and like. So he wrote a book on what most Americans want and did a lot of research and did a lot of surveys, and it's a very interesting book. But he has one thing that I wanted to share with you. He did a survey of saying, what are the top five things that Americans want most? What are the top five things that Americans want most? It was a survey, all ages, all locations, so a very generic survey. So here's the audience participation part of the program. What are the top five things? Name me something that you think's on the top five list of what Americans want most. Money. Okay, raise your hand so I can call on you. Money. Yes.
Respect.
Power.
Health.
Happiness. You say happiness too. Both of you are sitting over there. Yes.
Peace.
Security. Okay. Good. Survey says that most of you were not right. Which just means that you're not like, you know, the survey. But interesting. What Americans want most. Top five things. Number one, more money. Number two, less hassles. Number three, more time. Number four, more options. And number five, no worries. Okay? More money, less hassles, more time, more options, no worries. Now, I didn't tell this to you as a straw man to say, boy, how dumb this is. No, let's respect this. And let's see, why is that it? I mean, you said really powerful things as well. By the way, the data also indicates that by and large, Americans think that meaning is important, that health is important, that family is important. They're not dissing those, but when push comes to shove, and you say, what do they want most? Right? More money, less hassles, more options, more time, and no worries. What does that mean? It means that you're growing at a kind of intense and challenging time, which maybe has something to do with the new technology as well, where people are struggling. They're not struggling like their parents did in the Depression. There's no depression in America. Right? Even the Great Recession is more a recession of the spirit than it is an actual recession for most people. Right? But people are feeling pressured. It didn't say that they say they want wealth. Right? It didn't say they want to be rich. It said they wanted more money. More money. They wanted less hassles. I mean, think about hassles. Hassles aren't even what you expect. For example, have any of you recently gone out to buy a pair of scissors? So I would think you go out to buy a pair of scissors, they give you the scissors, you put it in a bag, you take it home, you have the scissors. No. Scissors today all come in hard, clear plastic casing. Easy to open. Easy to open if you're a 12-ton elephant. Right? And so you get the scissors and you say, okay, I'm going to open it. And you try to separate the cardboard backing right from the plastic. It doesn't work. Right? You try to kind of pull it or look if there's a place where there's a tear. It doesn't work. Right? You get reduced and you go like this to see if anything doesn't happen. You look around to make sure no one is seeing you because you're going to do something that you know is stupid but you know everybody does. And you take it, you try to bite into it so that the plastic breaks, right? And then finally you look to someone and say, I don't know how to open this. They say, well, you have a pair of scissors and you can open it. I don't have a pair of scissors. That's why I'm buying the scissors. Right? Then what less hassles? I mean, we've done that, right, for safety and we've done it for all different kinds of things. But it's all harder. It's all, I need my medicine. I'm not feeling well, but I have to make sure I have the careful safety cap that I have to push it down very hard, and I have to then push the thing. I just want my aspirin. I have a headache. Right? Less hassles. It's too complicated. Right? More time. More time because I seem to be busy all the time. I just want more time. And I don't want to be programmed. I just want more options. And if I, my mind could just be free a little bit. Right? That's what they want most. Great. Is that enough? Is that your vision? Is it enough in life if we have more money, less hassles, more time, more options, and no worries? No, not for me. I want to do something. I want to travel somewhere. I want to love and live. I want to serve. I want to think about values that really matter and how I represent those values that really matter. It's very interesting when we had the... some of you might know there was an incident in Tucson, Arizona, where a lunatic opened fire, tried to assassinate a member of Congress and killed five or six people, wounded others. So it first of all let out a whole geschrei that the people were saying, well, they're doing this because the gun laws aren't strict enough. They're doing it because everybody in Congress is shouting at each other and there's no civility. They're doing it because et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they finally said, they're doing this because a lunatic shot a congresswoman, but we're not happy with the level of discourse in our country. We're not happy that we're shouting at each other. I mean, it happened in 1995 here after Prime Minister Rabin was assassinated. So there was also that not inappropriate talk about, look how we shout at each other, look how we're demonizing each other, look at the environment that's created. I mean, nobody said that there was a direct correlation, but people said that. So President Obama spoke at a commemoration service. And there was two lines that he said that I thought was interesting in terms of an American perspective on what Americans really want. It says, we are reminded that in the fleeting time we have on this earth, what matters is not wealth, nor status, nor power, nor fame, but rather how well we have loved and what small part we have played in bettering the lives of others. So it's a very nice statement. But I also, it's very nice, but it's just kind of out there hanging. It's let's be good, let's do good, and if you were in my generation, let's get a guitar and sing Kumbaya. Okay, because it's really very nice. That's nice, but where does that take me? Okay, I think we're in a different place. I think we're in a different place, and I think we get more help in articulating our vision and our values. Can I just steal this for a minute? So yesterday, Shabbos, we read the Master Parsha, one of the Master Parsha, the Parsha of Yisro. And I think in that there's a question about what our vision is and how we respond to that vision. And if I can actually find it, I'd love to just share it with you. So just two psukim, so it's easy enough. Here we are. Umosha Allah al-Halakim, Vayikra Elav Hashem min Hahar Lemar. God speaks to Moshe from the mountains, saying, Kosomar leves Yaakov esagid levnei Yisrael, thus you should speak to the women and the men. Atem re'isem asher asisi l'mitzrayim. You saw what I did to Egypt. Ve'eso eschem al kanfei nesharim. And I took you out, I lifted you up, right, on the wings of eagles. Ve'avi eschem elai, and I brought you to me. I lifted you up on the wings of eagles. Not I schlepped you through the desert. I lifted you up on the wings of eagles. You weren't going to be pedestrian. You're going to soar. And on the wings of eagles, I'm not going to hold you in my talons. I'm going to put you on the wings of the eagle. So you're going to be on my wings, and you're going to look up, and you're going to see the sky. And no other bird can attack you because I'm flying higher than they are. But I have taken you up on the wings of eagles, not to take you out of Mitzrayim, not to take you to Eretz Yisrael, right? To bring you to me. To bring you to me. And then comes the deal. The Ata, and now. If you listen to my voice, Ushmartem es brisi, and you guard my covenant, you do my mitzvot. And you make yourselves chosen to me, because the whole world is mine. I respectfully suggest that we're not so much the chosen people as we are the choosing people. If we choose to be God's people, if we choose to behave that way, if we do that, we listen to his voice, we observe his bris, we do his mitzvahs, we choose God. What's the other part? What does God do? Then you get to be a kingdom of priests and a noble people. Then you get to live a life that's really extraordinary, but you also get to be my poster child because we have a deal. You do that for me, right? And we get to advance civilization. It doesn't just schlep along. We get to be an Orla Goyim because God cares about the whole world, and our job is to model the way you can live, and in the process of doing it, have a really good life. Very interesting to me, we read about Har Sinai. So do you know that the Kedusha of Har Sinai is a temporary Kedusha? Right? While Hashem was giving the Torah, the mountain was Kodesh. The people couldn't go up. There was Kedusha of Har Sinai. As soon as the Kolot and the Brakim and the voice of God and the Aseres HaDibros ended, no more Kedusha. If we could find Har Sinai, we could walk up to Har Sinai, no problem. In fact, in the days I'm old enough to remember when the state of Israel controlled the Sinai Peninsula, and there was a place called Santa Catarina, a monastery, that is at the foot of a mountain called Jabal Musa, or Har Moshe, which tradition says is Har Sinai. We don't know if it is or if it isn't. It could have been. It's a low mountain. It's in the right kind of place. So I remember I took a college group there, and we got up at 3 a.m. in the morning, and we walked up the mountain. We davened Kevasikim on the top of what could have been Har Sinai. No problem doing that. Okay, we have another mountain called Moria, Har Habayis. Okay, the Kedusha of Har Habayis is always, it exists ad hayom hazeh. It's just a low mountain, and there's a ruin on there. And many of us hold that we are taught that you can't go up on Har Moria because the Kedusha is permanent. What's the difference? Why is Har Sinai temporary Kedusha, Har HaMoriah, Har HaBayit, permanent Kedusha? So, Mefarshim answer. That on what happened on Har Sinai, God came down and God gave us the Torah. That's not a small thing, but that's what he did. What happened on Har HaBayit? We partnered with God in building a temple to God. And the Shutfus creates a Kedusha, right, that doesn't end. Right? That ultimately our opportunity and responsibility in life is to partner with God and do something that is eternally Kodesh. The basic role of the Jew is to be Mekadesh the whole. That's why the first mitzvah was HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. It's in our hands to decide when the Kedusha of Yontif is, because we decide when it's Rosh Chodesh. Right? And the master lesson was, you're not slaves anymore, you get to control time. Time doesn't control you, so how are you Mekadesh the whole? And in everything we do, it's all a process of doing that. It seems to me that this is a time when you should be thinking of how being Mekadesh the whole is your vision of the world, and how your particular talents and your particular desires work in building the most precious thing you have, which is your life. And this year, and if you stay for a Shana Bet, next year, precious building years. By the way, years of selfishness. And I said that carefully, not as a pejorative. Years of selfishness. We want you to concentrate on yourself. There are no distractions here. Who are you? What's your Yiras Hashem? What are your skills in unfolding the secrets of God's Torah? Right, you get to do that. Your parents want you to invest in that. And then not say, okay, did that, now we get on with life. But how is it malin b'kodesh? How do you go to the next step? How do you go to the next step where you continue to grow and figure out how, if you know, what your special thing is? Thank God, Esther and I have six children. Right, we have six children. So number one is a Jewish educator. Okay, number two is a Rav, and a Jewish educator. Number three is a teacher. Number four is going for a doctorate in clinical psychology. Number five is a rock star who is probably going to go into business. And number six is a sophomore at Stern College who's majoring in physics and I think wants to be an engineer. Okay, we all find our path to say, and I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. I'm a recovering lawyer, I promise. I mean, I don't want you to overemphasize career planning because I promise you I didn't start and say, okay, you know, I'm in high school and I want to go to college and I want to be president of Yeshiva University. What do I do? First of all, someone would have put me into therapy right away. But I'll go even further. If there was any job in the Jewish world that I absolutely knew I would never have, it was safe for me to criticize because I absolutely knew I would never have, it was being president of Yeshiva University. I'm not a Rav, I'm not a Gaon, except maybe to a few benighted souls. And I thought that was what you had to do. So I promise you that you really have to think about your future, but recognize that you are really not the only career guide that you have. There's a Rabboni Shel Olam who has his own plans for how you go. So you have to do everything, but you also have to have a hunk of bitachon. But I'm saying, what an opportunity for you to think about what's the package that makes you that special you, and then how are you going to make sure that you put yourself in environments where you develop your best friends who share critical values with you, where you allow yourself to grow in all the ways that you can, and that you find the path that's yasher. I mean, that's really the challenge. So I very much appreciate your giving me the time to share this, because I think this is pretty much the central message of why I do what I do, and it's a zechus to be able to share it with people who are going to stand on my shoulders and go far beyond. When my family lived in Washington, because Hillel was based in Washington, I would very much enjoy often going to Gallaudet University. Gallaudet University is a special university for deaf and hard of hearing young people. And I would enjoy it for a silly reason. In the lobby, they had a model of a little red schoolhouse, you know, encased in a case. And there was a plaque on the front of it with a quote that didn't have attribution. So I don't know who said it, but it sounds like it has to be from someone Jewish. But it said the following thing. It's what I want to close with you. It said, there are only two lasting gifts that we can hope to bequeath to our children. One of them is roots. The other is wings. We so much know, and I'm so confident, that you have grown up with your parents and with your family and with your teachers and rabbeim, helping strengthen those roots, letting them grow deep. You're here now where, in fact, those roots are being nourished and being nurtured and being encouraged. Right? But we also want you to have wings. We want you not to be grounded in the earth, but we want you, like the sulam, to have your feet in the earth, but your aspirations to heaven. We want you to be able to fly. The notion of spending a life deepening your roots and extending and spreading your wings is the greatest wish I can have for you, and the greatest nechama I have that my children and my grandchildren will profoundly not be alone and will be in a better world. So thank you very much. So since I'm a generalist, which means I don't know much about many things, I'm very happy to take questions feel free that I can use my full ignorance in answering them. So let me make it safe for you, please, really safe for you. I don't care if you want to ask me a question about my children, want me to sing Kol Barama to you, want to know about different campuses, questions about Yeshiva University, questions about life, or everything except what I feel about President Obama or any other political figures, because university presidents can't have political views. Just tell me your name and where you're from, please. Where?
Long
Island. No, that wasn't a hearing problem. Northwood, man, okay.
So, what is Yeshiva University, does it offer to non-Yeshiva University students?
An opportunity to transfer. I'll answer you this way. Talking straight to you, I believe that the future of our people is dependent on who graduates from Yeshiva University. I think kind of passively Orthodox or B'dieved Orthodox doesn't sustain the world and doesn't provide the world with leaders. I spent 15 years of my life building up Jewish campus life around the world because I believe in Jews and I believe in Jews being strong with each other. I frankly didn't build it for Orthodox kids, except there are a lot of people for whom YU is not right. And you're right in asking that there needs to be a strong environment where Orthodox kids can be. But it's b'dieved, it's not l'chatchila, it's from in my book. When I was at Hillel, and I had nothing to do with Yeshiva University except I sent my kids there, and you should also understand I'm a graduate of MTA, and in those days I had such a sufficiently miserable experience at MTA that wild horses wouldn't get me to YU. So I'm not a YU graduate. And I have very few regrets in my life. One of them is that I didn't go there, not because of the old alma mater, I'm waving the flag. I'm a high school educated Jew. I learn, and I think I know a couple of things, but I'm always struggling. I'm always struggling with a text that never became ragil to me. I was lucky enough that when I was in college, all my friends were YU people, not because those are the only people worthy of having as friends, but they really gave me opportunities. I was involved in youth outreach and stuff like that. So when I was at Hillel and someone would come to me and say, you know, my kid has been accepted at Penn and at YU, and you run Hillel, which one do you think they should go to? My answer then is the same as my answer now, which is that that's the wrong question. The right question is a different one. Is Yeshiva University right for my child? If Yeshiva University is right for my child, then Harvard can't compete because there's just no place like YU. It doesn't have, it's a sui generis. It's a one of its type. If there are reasons why YU is not for you, so I can tell you about 15 places where there's decent campus life. What do we do there? You know, we don't even charge for any of our websites. So we have yutorah.org, which is probably one of the most fabulous collections. We have 35,000 shiurim and counting that are available for downloading. And I would urge you, if you're at another place, so make sure that one of the things you do is download shiurim, you figure out the topics you want to do or the rabbeim you want to learn from, and carry it around with you on your iPod or whatever it is that we carry around these things with now. And use it. When we have programs like Torah tours and the like, and service learning programs where we send students around the world or stuff like that, I'm a bad guy. I made a decision that it's not open to anybody except YU students because I felt that I don't think people should do YU a little bit. I think you should be part of it. So that's not available to you. On the other hand, there are lots of programs that we do in coalition. You know, our APAC group will go down to Washington to lobby and they'll happily join with others from other colleges who are doing it. But we do speakers bureaus and therefore we have YU speakers and YU Shabbatot in different places. I think that we need to have more musmachim of YU go work on campuses either as Hillel directors or as members of the Jewish JLIC thing in those ways. Other than that, it's a closed job. Okay. Rabbi Miller.
Sparked by Gilad's question, what was the motivation for opening YU's Center for the Jewish Future, and what exactly are the activities that it does?
Okay, so the Center for the Jewish Future is kind of like the transmission inside YU. There are two focuses. It's Klape Pnim and Klape Chutz. Klape Pnim, inside, it was creating opportunities for our students to think about the Jewish future and to have experiences at developing their own leadership skills. So it's and using them. So, for example, we have a program called the Model UN that many of you might have participated in. So it's a leadership opportunity for our undergraduates to take charge of an important program. If it's a Saracek tournament, which is a high school basketball tournament, so we use students to be able to organize that. That's done with the Center for the Jewish Future. But we also have like service learning missions to Nicaragua, to El Salvador. We just had a great mission here with 40 men and women who came here together with Rav Yaakov Neuberger to explore the question of dual loyalty. How are you loyal to America and loyal to Israel? To go visit different Duchesed projects, but visit different Israeli homes from people from different immigrant groups to see how they've been acculturated to the land. We do a program called Counterpoint in the summer in Yerucham and Dimona, where we have college students go and run a day camp for underprivileged Jewish teenagers to teach them English, but it's really to form bonding experiences, and it gives them incredible leadership experiences. It's been so successful that we're expanding it this year to Arad and maybe to Yemen Ord this summer. And we also do something called Quest, which is a leadership development and training program, an array of programs for young people who are our students to be able to realize that they have enormous capacities to both make a difference and also feel good making a difference. And we're developing a whole group of service learning programs. Klapei Chutz, the point is, what do we do to see that Yeshiva University and its products are of a complete, are on an ongoing influence for the Jewish future? So it goes everywhere from having continuing programs of support and development for rabbis, to making sure that we are developing more day school teachers, and once they're out there, having a support network for them and continuing training, to work with other parts of the university to start doing certificate programs in experiential education and in other things, to have speaker series so that there are YU faculty and rabbeim who speak in different places around the country, and to provoke people like Rav Boaz to think about what he does for the Jewish future. So that's the purpose of it. Yes, sir? Who are you?
Adam Shafian.
Hi, from?
Cleveland.
Cleveland. You know my kid?
Very well, yeah.
Did he teach you? Yeah. He was a teacher?
Yeah, yeah.
He's cool, huh?
Great guy.
Yeah, okay. Email him, say I didn't embarrass him too badly.
As a future student, how do you give advice to someone who tries to find the right balance of, say, having your Jewish studies until early afternoon, if not later, and then starting your other classes and trying to find the right balance of studying and tests and everything like that?
So, look, you know, I hear a lot when I say, why aren't you going to YU? Well, it's like day school. It's a continuation of day school. What they really mean, and when I probe, it's I don't want to keep having a dual curriculum. You know, I can go to a good college. It's 15 hours a week of class. This is going to be 15 hours a day. Well, it's not 15 hours a day. I guess the light answer is I have six kids. They're of all different levels of academic achievement, right? They all owned YU before I was involved in it. They just made it theirs. You talk to kids, talk to students when they come here. Some are, I mean, you have guys who are like in the honors program doing pre-med and Rav Rosenzweig Shear figuring out how to go on service learning programs, and you'll find them in the gym at 1 o'clock in the morning because the gym's open till 2 and the pool's open till 2 and the exercise room's open till 2. I think, and by the way, and there are different programs of Limudei Kodesh that you choose, not more advanced or less advanced, but more like a boutique. If what you're looking for is a classical Eastern European yeshiva that's one of the greatest in the world, so you go into the yeshiva program and you spend your morning in Seder with a chevrusa developing all kinds of skills. You have different supplemental shiurim that go on, and then you get your shiur from your Rav, and you start at the 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If you want to say, wait a minute, I really want to learn Hebraica, I want to take a course in Gemara, but I want a more academic Jewish experience, so the IBC program is no sad excuse. It's really high level, except it's done from 9 to 1. If you want more of a boutique where you have a Rebbe, but you do Machshava, and you do Torah, and you do Gemara, and it's 9 to 1, that's the base medrash program. People, and even within the yeshiva program, you find the Rebbe that seems to be the right one in terms of your style, your learning, and you do it. There is no question you're making a major commitment. You're spending your mornings 5 days a week involved in Torah study. And then people go on, and look, one of the reasons I'm trying to introduce even distance learning in some computer-based courses is that I want to give students a little bit more flexibility. If they want to take their class on Sunday afternoon while they're driving somewhere and they want to do it on their iPod, they should be able to do it as long as they're serious about it, and we'll get to that in time. I also very strongly, although we happily give a year's academic credit for your time here at Lev HaTorah, and we think that it's a wonderful experience, I strongly, and therefore you can get out in six semesters of college, I think you're making a mistake. I think you should have a full college education, and that's eight semesters. And we've made a deal that if you study in Israel for a year, we guarantee you that in your fourth year in college, tuition will not be more than half. As we offer a guaranteed half scholarship for people who will spend a fourth year in YU if they've learned in Israel, because we think it's the best of both worlds. I think you shouldn't take more than 12 or 14 credits a semester. I think that what my kids did is, you know, Thursday night was fun. By the way, I'm there often late at night, so the gym is filled and the pool is filled, and we have more intramurals than you could imagine, and people are writing for the newspaper, and they're doing the Israel Club, and they're doing you know, young Republican and young Democrat. We seem to have, we're probably one of the only campuses in the country, a larger young Republican group than we have a young Democrat group. And I've spoken to the young Democrat, and he's fine. And in 3 years, it can turn itself around. You know, it can go anyway. You manage to do it. I mean, I ask students that all the time because you're not going for a vacation, but people seem to celebrate it. Most of our extracurricular activities are co-ed. Girls meet guys. 480 co-ed people. Well, co-ed people. People in a co-ed group go for the end of Sukkot on Torah tours to 85 different communities. I mean, there's a ton of opportunities we have. It causes sometimes some people some consternation, but 40 feet from our base medrash are two wonderful Wi-Fi late-night co-ed lounges where people can just, you know, relax. I think people do it. I think there's no question that you're getting more your money's worth at a place like YU because there's so much there. I also want to give you another silly little pitch. We get lots of transfers now, mostly from Barnard, from Maryland, a little bit from Queens, and from Brandeis are our bigger transfers. It's not easy to be a transfer. If you're not sure, think about the logic of saying, let me start at YU, mom and dad, do me a favor, here's the deal. I'd like to be at YU, but I'm not sure. If after a year I want to go somewhere else, you won't give me any grief and you'll help me. Okay, you'll come to me. I'll write your recommendation to the president of whatever university you want. Right? It's if you're unsure, take a risk on it. And the first 3 months will be hard. Like the first couple of weeks, you didn't fall right into loving it here, did you? You have to get the rhythm of the place. You have to decide how you're doing it. And you're not liking it here just because it's easy. It's not easy. Now, you do have more, you have less burdens on you. You know, you get into the top five things that Americans worry about when you come back to a university, right? But you're spending your time wisely. People, you know, celebrate on weekends. That was a too long an answer, but it's a really complicated question. Sir?
Nathan Franco.
From? Silver Spring, Maryland. How are you?
Harmony Road.
Regards to your family.
I heard, talking to a lot of people, that YU is known for, you know, better than other schools, I guess, at getting people into, you know, great grad schools. Is that fair?
Yeah, well, it's probably on the level of most Ivy League schools in terms of getting you into graduate schools, and it's not our doing. We get really wonderful students. Right, the reputation is, it goes to your question, that these are kids who really know how to work hard. These are people who've applied themselves. Since they do this Jewish stuff, they know a lot about analysis, so they'll be good students of analysis. And they've come from a small liberal arts school, and look at the people who are writing recommendations. They seem to know who they are. But I'll give you, since you said it, let's see if I have a piece of paper. I just got a report. Maybe I didn't take it with me. I just got a report on our success rate. You should know that last year, 95% of the students who applied to law school were accepted at least one law school. 88% of those who applied to medical school were accepted at least one medical school. And I'm told it's harder, but 80% of those who applied to dental school got into dental school. That's compared to a national average of 45% acceptance rate, way higher than the national averages of all of them. But those are really extraordinary figures. But I'd also tell you that in terms of business and in terms of being placed, because now more and more people are saying, I'm not ready to go right to graduate school, I want to get some work experience. So the network that we have of alumni and the new work that we're doing with our Career Development Center is really positioning us better to be able to take full advantage of all our contacts to get you a job. It's a challenging time out there economically, but I also will tell you that don't live in the moment. By the time you graduate from college, it's really going to be better, and there are going to be all kinds of more opportunities than there were. There is certainly one of the reasons to come to YU is because of your relative standing in getting into graduate school. If you do well, if you mess up, then you can go to the other YU, Yale, and it won't make a difference. I always call the other Yale the other YU. Yes, sir.
Hi, Barry Miller from Houston, Texas.
Hi, Barry. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Nice to see you.
I have a question. Would you ever consider opening up a branch of Yeshiva University, and an undergraduate branch of Yeshiva University in Israel?
Yeah, only every day would I consider it. It's one of my many failures to date. It's a local kach pashut. I mean, on two levels. First of all, I think there are people who are ready to make aliyah, and if they had why you here, they do it. I'd also tell you that it's not just the children of the Olim, but a lot of people here. Israel desperately needs this kind of beacon that says Torah Mada, or living an integrated life based on Torah, has to have a makom. There are lots of little places, but this is a place of such sharp edges that there seems to be it's almost like the invisible Torah Umada Jew, and we cluster together, but we should be a much bigger influence here. The problem is, there are multiple problems. Number one, education here is different. It's a European system. So there is no undergraduate school here. You go to university, you choose a faculty. You're going to Hebrew U, you're going to join the social work faculty or the law faculty, and you become a law student as an undergraduate. We're not that way. Number two, you're probably talking about $500 million to have enough money to open any kind of place that's going to have a real faculty and really doing it. And number three, you know, I met with the mayor of Jerusalem near Barkat. So he's a lovely fellow. And he said to me, Richard, you have to open Yeshiva University in Jerusalem. And I said, I got Jerusalem right. Huh? And I said, Mr. Mayor, I said, that's fine. But, you know, the education authority, the Malag, is very protective of new schools. And where you locate it, and land is at a premium, and the money to hire a faculty. So, Richard, I am speaking vision, you are speaking details. So listen, guys, I mean, vision without details is posturing, right? When you develop this vision you're going to develop, make sure you also figure out how to get to that vision. I can't do it. I can't do it yet. That's also vision. You get the word yet. It's beyond my reach. Now, if you're very rich and you want to give me that kind of money, then I'll ask Rav Boaz to help me in organize. There'd be no lack of students to come, I think. Any other? Yes, sir.
Jake Owen from Atlanta.
Hi.
From your time at Hillel, what programs do you think that are at Hillel that are really making a difference on college campuses?
First of all, birthright is the most important, because it's the most important Jewish invention since the Bar Mitzvah. There is no way that you're going to convince people who don't have a Jewish passion like you have, or who don't have a Jewish background, to think positively about Israel. There's no way to do hasbara. There's just not. I've tried every possible way. It's this much distant, right? You get them to spend 10 days here, and they know that this is the family home. Right. So, and then once they're here, then you can talk about things. Look, the things that work on college campuses are really very varied. Trying to make Shabbat into something special without everybody thinking, "Oh, you're from," is a big deal. So, and lots of campuses, the signs are like, "Friday is a happening night at Hillel," and it doesn't say the S word. I think in campus, I mean, the truth of the matter is that one particular way is never going to work. So you have to offer a menu, not because you think this way's right, that way's right, but for me at least, the goal was that when a kid leaves campus after 4 years, if they say, you know, this Jew stuff matters to me, then we win, then the world goes on. I don't think there can be much more than that. I think Israel advocacy is important on campus, but I'm not quite sure who it is that we're trying to persuade, because the Palestinian activists are not waiting to have a conversation with you where they will be persuaded. Most Jews are running for cover and aren't really interested in it. But it's very important, just for being on campus, to be sure that the basic truths about Israel, you know, are revealed. So I think involvement with AIPAC is a really good thing. They do really good work. Being involved in Hillel, in any aspect of Hillel, whether it's their political action programs, whether you have a voice and want to be part of the a cappella group, whether it's doing outreach, meaning hang around the student center and get people to participate in the debate, getting people to hear cool speakers. The problem is there's lots of other stuff. No one's going to Hillel University. You're going to a place where there's a ton of things to do, and you're saying, well, why should I repeat any of that in Hillel? Because it's being done out there. That's part of the challenge. So, but I would say, if you're going to go to one of those campuses, the other thing is get yourself involved in the leadership of Hillel right away, because you'll have good friends there, and you'll have people who share your sense that Yiddishkeit is not just a distant adjective in the noun of defining who you are. You know, are you an American Jew or a Jewish American? Yeah. Anything else? Well, it is a yes, sir. Last question. Well, it depends what you think of yourself. I would like to think that in an undergraduate school where between the men and the women you have 3,000 students, there's ample opportunity to come and say, I'm going to be a leader in this group, even if you're a leader among leaders, number one. Number two, I also think at a place like Yeshiva, I mean, you probably are not going to be on an NCAA team at Georgetown University. If it's basketball, you might be a little short for the team. You want to be forward guard on the YU Maccabees. I don't know how good you are at basketball, but if you're really good, you can be that. You want to be the editor of the college newspaper. Think about, I'm not saying you can get away with it at Yeshiva where you can't get away with it elsewhere. It's a smaller community. You get to really find the place where you want to shine, and you get to shine there. The last thing I want to say about this is don't minimize the fact that this experience has to be about you growing. Right, and if the notion is, you know, I can go to a secular college and I'm going to be a leader and I'm going to really help Jews know who they are, that's very nice. But I'm going to be like the flight attendant on the airplane. When you get on the airplane and they give you instructions, they say in the event of an emergency, oxygen masks will come down. If you're traveling with someone who's infirm or with a small child, yeah, make sure your mask is on first. Right? You got to make sure that you are healthy and breathing well in order to be able to help others. I want to suggest to you that not yet is the right answer for you, and that you really need to fortify yourself in the best possible way for several more years, and then you can go take on the world, which you're going to do anyway. So hatzlacha, back to your learning. Thank you very, very much.
Business of saying I'm going to watch you, but I'm going to work like a horse.